A pleasure, as always, to have with me for this conversation Mark Rubinstein, author of the weekly newsletter Net Interest, which does a great job of dissecting financial sector themes. Mark, today I look forward to speaking with you about a hot brokerage, online brokerage firm called eToro that is going public via a SPAC transaction. And you have a terrific article basically providing some history, starting with E-Trade or even before that, and comparing and contrasting. And you titled it Party Like It's 1999 from E-Trade to eToro. Tell us more.
Well, thanks, John. Great to be here. So most people have heard of Robinhood. Robinhood filed confidentially for a IPO in the past couple of weeks, but getting in ahead of it is a company called eToro, which via a SPAC transaction is coming to the market. Now, eToro, and we'll talk in a short while a little bit more about it, but it's a retail brokerage platform. They are based and were founded in Israel. They have a large share of the European market. And what's interesting about it is, like Robinhood, and there are certain particulars which we'll go into around eToro, but broadly, like Robinhood, they offer commission-free trading. And if we kind of think back through history at retail brokerages, there have been a number of generations of retail brokers. The very, very first generation was the full service firms, the likes of Merrill Lynch and so on, that worked out of branch networks and employed relationship managers on a commission basis. Then we had the discount brokers. So in 1975, brokerage commissions were deregulated, and that paved the way for discount brokers that stripped away the bundled services that the full service brokerage firms were offering and offered execution only, stripped down services at a lower rate. So we're talking about Charles Schwab was the pioneer in that space. And then in the 90s, we had e-brokers. So E-Trade is the one that I highlight in my piece. It was actually founded in 1982, but it was a kind of a back office business that went direct to consumer only in 1992. And they went direct to consumer to offer even cheaper discount brokerage using the internet as their means of distribution. And then finally, we have got the fourth generation of retail brokers, which includes the likes of eToro and Robinhood, which basically finished off a trend that E-Trade started. When E-Trade started, they were offering trades at $20 on average commission rates. And over the history of E-Trade, to the point where it was ultimately acquired by Morgan Stanley at the back end of last year, those commission rates went down and down and down. From 20, they went through $10, and they ultimately went in 2019 to zero. And Robinhood and eToro are the business models that kind of encapture that zero commission rate culture.
What's interesting also is to compare investor expectations, which were very high for E-Trade when it went public. The ultimate long-term returns for those buying E-Trade weren't as spectacular as expected. And you talk about also the marketing spend that was needed to actually grow, and that the customer acquisition cost for E-Trade actually went up, not down, as it grew.
It was a very competitive industry. So, cast your mind back to the mid-90s. The internet is a burgeoning tool used not only for distribution, but actually, and this is what E-Trade and its peers, Ameritrade, there were various others competing in the industry, did very well. It wasn't just about price. through a cheaper means of distribution, it was also additional services. So the ability for traders, for investors to online charting and basically have access to information that was on demand and up to date. But it was a very competitive industry. So E-Trade, the number of online brokers grew from, in 1995, there were about 12 of them. It grew to over 100 by the late 1990s. And a period of consolidation took place and some very aggressive, to your point, marketing took place. E-Trade, in a kind of foreshadowing of some of the experiences we've witnessed over the past few years, took a check from SoftBank. SoftBank actually, in the summer of 1998, injected $400 million via a private placement into E-Trade, and that gave them huge firepower to invest in marketing. Actually, it doubled their coffers, and in the late 1990s, the online trading industry was spending about $1 billion a year on advertising. So very, very high profile Super Bowl adverts, for example, which E-Trade was behind, but they spent a lot on marketing. And what that meant is that inevitably, the market itself was still growing. And what E-Trade was able to do and all of its peers was, again, similar to the experience we've seen in the recent past, is bring new investors that didn't have a history of trading on the markets into the industry. So it wasn't simply a question of converting winning share from the likes of Schwab and from Merrill Lynch. The market itself was growing. The pie overall was growing, not dissimilar to what we've seen in the recent past as retail investors have come back into the market. But it was very, very competitive. And so the cost of customer acquisition went up. But other similarities to what we're seeing in the recent past as well. So Howard Stern had a radio show. I call him in my piece the Dave Portnoy of his day, kind of equally profane. And he said on his radio show one day, Daytech Online. Daytech Online was one of the 100 online brokers. Actually, it was ultimately acquired by Ameritrade, which has since been acquired by Schwab. But he said on his radio show, Daytech Online, I love Daytech Online. It's the fast, easy and fun way to trade stocks online. Stuttering John, who was one of his crew, uses it and he's making money. You get lots of free charts and you can check your account online. Very, very similar to the kind of buzz we're seeing around the likes of Robinhood right now and some of these other of the latest generation of online trading platforms. All of it applied to E-Trade, Ameritrade, Daytech Online, and that cohort back in the late 1990s.
Fascinating. And you say every generation kind of has its own model, if you will, or brokerage type of service. And eToro is quite interesting in that it's really quite social.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so I think one of the innovations around business models in the past 10 years, it's not new, but certainly wasn't around in the late 1990s, is this idea of user-generated content. Now, it's been applied by many of the social media companies, but it hasn't really migrated into financial technology companies yet. eToro arguably is changing that. So just a little bit of background about eToro. So eToro is, as I said earlier, an Israeli trading platform. Principally in Europe, their core business is contracts for differences, which is a derivative instrument which allows a lot of leverage that is not legal in the US for retail investors, but is very, very popular in Europe. And there are a number of companies which offer contract for difference trading to retail investors. Plus 500 is one. IG Index is another. There are a number, both of those are listed on the London Stock Exchange. There's a number of them. eToro started out doing this, and it's very profitable, actually. It's a very profitable business. I talk in the piece about there's a spectrum, if you like, between investing and betting. And some products are closer to pure betting, others are closer to pure investing, and contracts for differences sit kind of in the middle. And the business model historically had been not dissimilar to a bookies business model rather than a retail brokerage business model, i.e. they could take the other side, and they could take the other side of the customer's trade, and given that most customers lost money, that would be a source of profits. Many of these CFD companies actually hedged that away, but to varying degrees, that's at least a strategic choice that they can make. So eToro was doing this. eToro decided to move into the US in 2019. It started via crypto, but ultimately, and it now offers retail trading, not dissimilar to Robinhood, as we discussed earlier, at zero commission rates. What it brings, though, to the table is something unique. And it picked this up from the social media companies that offer user-generated content. It recognized that there's a social element to trading, that the kind of e-trade customer of 20 years ago that would sit at home, the kind of day trader, the archetypal day trader that would sit at home, there would be some, he would have some social input. I say he very much on purpose, because most of the customers of eToro today and eTrade 20 years ago, very, very clearly male. He would have had some social input through, you know, chat boards of 20 years ago and Wall Street Bets, clearly the analogy today. And actually 20 years ago, many day trading kind of shared office facilities were set up. So there was always this demand for social, but eToro have taken that one stage further by offering offering a social platform at the heart of their retail trading platform. And what that means very specifically is the ability to copy, this is where user-generated content comes in, the ability to copy other traders' trades. So as a user of eToro, one can allocate, you know, let's say, John, you're a great trader on the platform. I, as a user on the platform, can allocate some of my funds to you, not to trade directly, but to copy every trade at the same price that you trade it, that you do. And in this way, this kind of competition builds up for the best traders. The single best trader on the platform currently has $130 million of AUM mimicking his trades, which is quite remarkable. So very, very interesting new model, which copies, on the one hand, the user-generated content of social media platforms, but on the other hand, the kind of institutional mimicry. You know, for example, Monish Pabrai, who I know you know very well, has always spoken about no shame in copying the best trades, and this is a way to replicate that technologically.
And there's also a status element to this.
Yes, there is. There is, I guess that stems from the number of copiers that any particular trader would have. That trader and the amount of AUM that is copying that trader. And status, there's been some great work done elsewhere about status and social media. And the idea that in the online world, there are new currencies of status, whereas in the offline world, so the example I gave was the golf game. And again, going back through those generations of retail brokers, the idea that one had a Merrill Lynch personal relationship manager who would take you out for dinner, take you to some corporate events. You know, in the UK, that might be Wimbledon, let's say, maybe take you for a game of golf. That's how status would be conveyed. In this new kind of online world of social status and the currency being followers, or online influence, eToro have captured a new vein in which that can be conveyed.
And in that sense, it's actually quite different from E-Trade, the marketing tagline of which was "It's your money," which is more of a solitary message, whereas eToro's is "Trade like Steve."
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's very good. I think, absolutely right. When I uncovered those slogans, those taglines, I think they really get to the heart of what these businesses are. And the difference, I would say, with eToro, so Robinhood equally isn't a straightforward retail brokerage platform. They've gamified it. eToro have taken a slightly different perspective and have socialized it. So both of them are offering something different, something in addition to just the core trading facility. I think eToro's is interesting because one of the paradoxes that I've always grappled with is this idea, you know, and all of us who are part of this, your community, John, maybe take more of a longer term view on investing than might be typical. And the paradox is that all of these online tools that supposedly democratize finance are great, but they optimize to attention, as any online tool does. The idea that you should have mobile retail trading facility is almost anathema to the idea, you know, to the idea to the idea of long-term investing. And I've always struggled with this, and they optimize so. And the way Robinhood has gone is they optimize they gamified it in order to attract more attention and to get more kind of clicks on the app and more eyeballs on the app. And what eToro have done is they've taken a slightly different perspective, which is applying this social overlay, which is still early, but it's not necessarily scalable because we can't all copy everyone else's trades, although clearly through index investing, that's what we do. But it's not necessarily scalable, but it's be interesting to see how it pans out and if it's able to actually reconcile that paradox of kind of longer term investing yet with the mobile app based front end.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point because it does seem like while optimizing for attention, we've been moving collectively more toward the gambling end of things than toward the buy and hold end of things.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. And some of these traders I've looked on the platform, the eToro platform, some of them are pretty good. Some of them, they do take a long-term approach. eToro itself awards a risk score to every one of the traders on its platform, which punishes for excessive trading, over-trading. And some of them take a value-oriented approach, some of them don't, but they take a very transparent approach that in many cases can be quite long-term.
What's also interesting, we've talked about regulation in the financial sector in the past, obviously a huge topic, and especially when it comes to managing money and investing. I'm wondering what your views are on a new model like eToro coming and then all these regulatory things that they have to navigate, because I can imagine that if you're copying someone else's portfolio moves and that person can even get paid for that, that, you know, at some point that person may need to be considered a money manager of sorts.
It's a really good point. And one of the observations I've often made about financial technology is that at some stage, as they grow, they hit up against a ceiling, which is the regulatory ceiling. And that when they're small, and eToro is still small, they are able to avoid that. I think you're right. I think there are various models. What they don't employ as aggressively as others is payment for order flow, which is clearly under the regulatory spotlight right now, and isn't legal in some markets outside of the US. But you're absolutely right. This could come under the spotlight. And yes, there are this kind of grey area between investing and gambling is one that is ripe for regulatory arbitrage. There was an example in the UK recently, a company called Football Index, which set up a stock exchange platform to invest in soccer, football players. Now, it turned out it was a Ponzi scheme. The company collapsed actually very recently, but it was regulated by the Gambling Commission rather than the Financial Conduct Authority. Yet they tried to present themselves as a kind of stock exchange and as a alternative investment platform. So there are issues when companies grow around regulatory arbitrage and around the ceiling that they hit from a regulatory perspective, which absolutely 100% certainly need to be watched out for.
Another point of comparison are the market valuations of these kinds of businesses. You talk about E-Trade's valuation at the time and compare it to eToro's implied valuation today.
Yeah, that's right. So E-Trade peaked, actually, the stock price peaked significantly, well, 6 months or so before, probably a year or so actually before. It peaked in 99, it peaked before the market peaked. Its market cap in kind of October 99 was $5.5 billion, which was equivalent to around $3,500 per user at the time. And about eight times revenue, eight times kind of last 12 months trailing revenues. Now, eToro has just come through the SPAC. At the time of the SPAC announcement, it was done at a valuation of $10.4 billion, so twice the absolute dollar valuation of E-Trade, clearly 20 years on. But $8,500 per user rather than $3,500 per user, and 17 times revenues rather than eight times revenues. So there has been some valuation inflation along the way. I think one of the hopes around a number of these companies is the ability to do cross-selling. eToro does crypto. It launched a debit card recently and wants to be able to host a wallet as well. So to move into broader financial services, not dissimilar from many of these financial technology companies out there. But actually, again, E-Trade, if we go back and look at history, also have the same view. Remember, we spoke earlier that their customer acquisition costs were going up, their commissions per trade were going down. And so they had two strategic responses. One was consolidation, which they did. And the second, and actually there was a lot of speculation over its entire period, pretty much as a public company, that they would merge with Ameritrade. It never happened. But they did consolidate between the two of them, Ameritrade and E-Trade. But secondly, that they would go into more banking services. And actually, E-Trade collapsed in the financial crisis, had to be bailed out by Citadel, which is an interesting story, because we now know Citadel is the key wholesale market maker that buys payment for order flow. And E-Trade at the time provided it with a lot of that order flow. But it had to be bailed out by Citadel because they diversified too much into banking, which at the time meant crappy mortgage assets. And so they suffered huge losses in 2007, 2008 as a result of those losses. Now, you know, there's nothing on the horizon now vis-a-vis that, but nothing new either about this idea about cross-selling other financial products.
Well, we will certainly watch how the eToro SPAC develops. Expectations are high. Thank you so much, Mark, for providing the historical context, which is always instructive when there's a danger of getting caught up in the excitement of the moment.
Agree completely. Thanks, John.
Thank you.